is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, October 1st, 2019. I'm Buster Olney out here in Berkeley, California, at our hotel. It's early in the morning on Tuesday. Later today, we've got the workouts with the American League wildcard participants, the Rays and the Athletics. And back in Bristol, producing, as always, Troy Farkas. Troy, how you doing this morning?
A little under the weather this morning, Buster, but it's a big day for me, Buster.
Okay, what's that about?
I am going skydiving later today, so we'll hope that I'm back for the podcast tomorrow.
Now, is that an attempt to skydive out of the friend zone?
Wow, you had to go there, didn't you? But yes, if you must ask, I am going with the alleged mystery girl.
Okay. Well, are you a little bit nervous about jumping out of a plane?
You know, I wasn't. We've had this plan for about 3 weeks, and then I woke up this morning, and it hit me. Wow, I am jumping out of a plane today. 14,000 feet up in the air, Buster.
Wow. And I've talked to people who've had that experience, and I will not relate to you what they've told me.
Oh, boy. Don't scare me like that.
No. All right, let's get the news and notes of the day. Yesterday, the Angels announced that they have fired Brad Ausmus as their manager after just 1 year. There are, of course, ripples with this, perhaps leading to Joe Maddon. We'll be talking about that with Boog Sciambi coming up. Red Sox team president Sam Kennedy said on Monday that keeping Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez will be difficult. That, of course, is going to be something that's going to play out during the course of the offseason with the Red Sox trying to cut payroll while also attempting to keep Mookie Betts before he reaches free agency in the fall of 2020. Today, the Nationals and the Brewers start the 2020 postseason in the National League wildcard game. Max Scherzer will be starting for the Nationals, and he talked about the playoff atmosphere.
I mean, the atmosphere is going to be intense. Nats fans have really come out, and game against the Dodgers, I mean, the crowd was absolutely nuts for the game and against the Cubs. So we've had heartbreaks in both those games. You know, hopefully tomorrow's different.
Starting for the Brewers, Brandon Woodruff.
Going through the playoffs last year and kind of getting that experience, I think it definitely helps just coming in tomorrow. And just biggest thing is just taking it just like any other start, preparing the same exact way and just going out and just trying to do all the same things you've done the whole year. I think that's the most important thing, and just go out and have fun. That's the biggest thing. It's going to be a fun night, a big crowd. Obviously, season's on the line, so that's the kind of spots I like to be in and the games I want to pitch in.
The Brewers' Craig Counsell talked about managing a one-game playoff.
I still think it's about taking advantage of your team's strengths, so that doesn't change in a one-game scenario. That should not change. I don't think it necessarily impacts the game. We have a pretty clear idea of what we'd like to happen. Sure, they do too.
Counsell has aggressively managed with his bullpen in last year's playoffs. He was asked about how long Woodruff will pitch.
Well, it's the playoffs, so we're going to... I have no problem pushing him, I'll tell you that. How many pitches he's going to throw, I don't know, but I don't have any problem pushing him.
Nationals manager Davey Martinez talked about Scherzer.
I watched Max pitch his last few outings. He built up his pitch count. He felt good every outing. We watched his bullpen and monitor him. He felt good. The other day, he threw an unbelievable bullpen, one of the better ones I've seen. So he's ready to go. We're fortunate to have a Max Scherzer pitch in the wild card game, so it should be a lot of fun.
The playoffs start today. Let's get to it.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Sciambi on Baseball Tonight.
Boog Sciambi, the legend, will be at the microphone tonight when the Brewers face the Nationals in the National League wild card game. And Boog, a lot of times when I go into covering a game or a particular series, I have a gut feel like I really believe it's going to go one way or the other. Do you have a gut feel going into this game?
I really don't. I think it's an interesting matchup. I think the thing that's funny for the Brewers is, you know, the managing their pen and how they're going to get 27 outs is probably the first thing on Craig Counsell's mind. But I would say the next thing, though, is, are we going to score? And I'm going to ask him this tonight because I'm curious. But the way things go in terms of a baseball season, you've covered it when it gets day in and day out. You know, they lose Yelich, but after about a couple of days, you know, then Craig Counsell's figuring out how are we going to win today, and you don't think much about Christian Yelich as well as they played the final stretch. But it's not a day in, day out, man, we don't have Christian Yelich. And yet, my guess would be you play 18, 20 games without Yelich, and you just kind of move on, and now you're in a one-game elimination. And my guess would be that today it kind of starts again where Craig Counsell's sitting there going, man, we don't have Yelich for this game. So I do think that you know, seriously, that's my guess. I might be wrong, but I'm going to ask him that tonight. And I think in terms of the Nationals, look, they're a really good, really dangerous team. I know that that's a mainstream opinion, but I don't think it makes it any less real when you're talking about, you know, their three starting pitchers are monsters, and they are the team, I think, that could be the truest threat to the Dodgers. That would be my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And look, they're going to have Max Scherzer on the mound tonight. And in one sense, this was a fascinating decision for Dave Martinez. But on the other hand, it feels like there wasn't really any decision to make. Like, if you're around that team and you're around Max Scherzer, then to me, it was almost by default. Yeah, if there's one game, you know, you need one pitcher to save your life on one day, it's always going to be Max Scherzer, even if he's not at his absolute best. And I tell you what, and with all due respect to Patrick Corbin, who we haven't seen a lot in October, you know, Steven Strasburg, he's had some ups and downs, and you don't know exactly what you're going to get. You do know, at the very least, that Max Scherzer is going to be breathing fire.
No doubt. So, you know, I have a hard time imagining that Scherzer comes out and is just bad. I think that even a Scherzer, not a great performance, will give them a chance. That would be my assessment. That's sort of the floor on his performance is we still have a chance. And I think that's my opinion, but I think that should give Dave Martinez some calm.
I do think that the road through this particular game, the wild card game, is more difficult for Craig Counsell because of how he stitches together pitching, as you talked about, you know, trying to come up with the formula where he's going to get through 27 outs. A couple things jump out, and Boog, you and I were talking before we got started. Craig Counsell now is one of the best managers in baseball, and he's one of the longest tenured managers in baseball.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you're talking about early May of 2015, and he is now the senior manager in terms of tenure in the National League, which is wild because, like, my perception is still of someone who's kind of new at the gig, and it's where it's changed. I would disagree with you slightly, by the way. I think that, and I'm not saying it makes them any more of the favorite, but I think that relative to this Brewers team, I think that the single game format sets up and is easier for Craig Counsell than an entire series. You know, his main guy is obviously Woodruff's his best starter, and he's gotten great work out of Suter and Pomerantz, and he has Hader. Where his job gets more difficult is, you know, after 10 days or whatever, and on the night that Hader's not available, on the night that Pomerantz isn't available. So in a short series, that's where it can get a little more challenging because you may not have all your dudes. He's got all his dudes tonight. So for a single game elimination scenario, I honestly think, don't get me wrong. I think that there's probably a good 3 to 4 outs that he still is concerned about. But I think that for a single game scenario, do you understand my point in terms of what he's got to do in terms
Yes.
of a single game as opposed to how it matches up for multiple games? So that's just my 2 cents take on that.
100%. I would say, I think probably I didn't make my point well, was that Dave Martinez gives the ball to Max Scherzer and sits in the dugout and, way to go, Max. Right? Yeah. He's going to do that. On the other hand, if Brandon Woodruff gets off to a rough start, a couple guys get on base, the pitch count goes up,
you're right.
You know Craig Counsell's going to manage aggressively versus
right.
what Dave is going to do. All right. And we'll be talking about the injuries at play here for both these teams coming up. We're going to be speaking with Mark Zuckerman, who covers the Nationals, and Todd Rosiak, who covers the Brewers. There was a story in the Washington Post yesterday that the Nationals have made an offer to Anthony Rendon, who's going to be the premier position player free agent in the fall. According to the Post, the offer is for 7 years, $210 million on a base. There are some deferrals, and it could wind up being worth more than that. And as soon as I saw that, Boog, my first thought was, well, he gone. Because this is right out of what we saw last year, where once we got into the postseason, at the beginning of the offseason, there was a story in the Post. The leaking, the fact that the Nationals had made an offer to Bryce Harper, was almost like the team was saying, we want all the fans to know we tried.
Yeah.
And we're getting the offer out there, and we know that we're not going to be able to sign the guy. What was your reaction?
Yeah, similar. And two thoughts are coming into my head. One is, God, Rick Sutcliffe asked me a question that I still think in a vacuum is a fascinating question to ask, and that is, if you could only sign Gerrit Cole or Anthony Rendon this offseason, who would you sign? I think it's an interesting question just because, you know, we don't see very many guys. I think that Gerrit Cole is going to get some years in his deal, and more and more teams are obviously wary of doing that with starting pitchers, and yet you don't have the injury risk the same with a position player, but the caliber of a Cole – it's so hard to find, and yet, you know, Rendon is one of the most special position players. So I think that it's really interesting. And then, you know, for the Nats, they lost Bryce Harper, but I would also make this point. They replaced Bryce Harper with basically Bryce Harper. Like, Soto is the same thing, man. You're talking about, you know, a 20-year-old kid who's putting up, you know, 400 OBP, 500-plus slug, controls the strike zone, and he's cost efficient. So I know I'm moving away from the Rendon component, but yeah, I don't see him staying. I don't think that this is, they're going to engage this. And I would also say that that doesn't make sense to me, because if you were going to go out this past offseason and spend all the money on Corbin, I mean, you obviously have some type of, you know, medium term vision for this team. What's the point of letting your best position player scoot after anchoring down your pitching staff that way? It's just sort of it's just kind of weird to me.
Yeah, one thing about this, and I have not written this in a column, so this is sort of semi-original reporting because I have not run this past Rendon. I've heard from mutual friends of Rendon that he's not interested in that big, really long-term deal, that what he wants is a really great deal for 4 or 5 years. So in other words, and I'm making numbers up myself, let's say a 4-year deal for $40 to $45 million a year, and then he's going to take it to the ranch, right? 40 or 5 years at $40 million, that sort of thing. He's not interested in playing into his late 40s or late 30s. And, you know, part of the reason why I've heard this from mutual friends is that, you know, Rendon, who's a great guy, but Anthony Rendon, he has other interests in his life. You know, what was the line when, you know, a few years ago when he talked about baseball, he said, you know, I don't really watch baseball. It's boring. And friends have said he wants to get a relatively, within the pantheon, the landscape of major free agents, a much shorter term deal for more money, which is why there's been a lot of industry speculation that it might wind up at some point going with the Dodgers, because that fits what they look to do. What do you think about all that? Well, that make sense?
It's what they did with Bryce. It's what they did with Bryce Harper. I mean, they made a legitimate offer for Bryce Harper. They made him. They basically made him the offer that you just said the Dodgers did for Bryce Harper. So, yeah, that one's interesting. The other thing, you know, to back up what you're talking about in terms of Rendon. By the way, did you say take it to the ranch because he went to Rice?
Yeah, I did.
He's from. Yeah. Okay. All right.
He's from Texas. I did it on purpose.
He's from Texas.
Come on.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, my fault. Do you remember the highlight? I think it's against the Mets, but I'm not positive, where he steps out of the box with just one foot. He keeps the back foot in the box, but he steps out, and the camera closes in on him, and they get him in the middle of an at-bat in mid-full yawn. Like, in terms of the biology of that, with, I don't care if it's game 86 and nothing's happened. Like, the adrenaline of actually hitting, to be able to muster an actual yawn in the middle of an at-bat is incredible and tells you a lot about Anthony Rendon and just sort of like where his heart rate sits, I would say. So it's I had that visual in my head all the time.
Well, and I think you would agree with me on this. If he prefers to play till he's 34 and walks away rather than trying to play till he's 38, hey, more power to him, right? Tip of the cap. He can do what he wants. If that's what he prefers to do, that's totally fine. All right, let's get to some of the news that we've seen the last couple days. The Angels fire Brad Ausmus yesterday as their manager, 1 year into a three-year deal, and it comes the day after the Cubs announced that Joe Maddon's out. I would be shocked if Joe Maddon doesn't wind up with the Angels. Based on what I've heard about how much Artie Moreno likes him and appreciates him, he spent years in their organization as a coach. I think the firing of Ausmus is sort of ridiculous. Like 1 year into it, given all the pitching challenges that they had, you know, the tragic death of Tyler Skaggs during the course of the year, to evaluate him on that 1 year seems absurd to me. But this is, I assume, an owner-driven decision. What do you think?
I would agree that it would seem that that's where Joe Maddon is headed. You know, to me, my thought would be that, you know, Joe's landing spots are somewhat limited because he wants to get paid. And in today's, or that's my sense. And in today's world, a quarter of the managers make less than $1 million, which is amazing. I would tell you this on the Brad Ausmus thing. I like Brad. I didn't love that hire to begin with. I don't feel like there was anything about the way he handled his time in Detroit that would have made, you know, he was next to Billy Epler sitting out a season, and I'm sure that that influenced it. But I didn't feel like there was anything that took place during his time with Detroit that would make me think, yeah, that's the guy that I want. So I didn't love that hire, I personally. So even if it's not Joe Maddon, I would say that, look, if you hire a guy and fire him after 1 year, even if you don't get Joe Maddon, there's a problem with your process. There's no question. But I didn't love the hire. I would tell you that.
Boog, the Cubs are earlier in the process of picking their next manager. I'm hearing a lot about the possibility that Mark Loretta could be a serious candidate there, someone who was installed as bench coach for this year. And, of course, our friend and colleague David Ross, his name has popped up. And if Rossi ever asked me, and there's no reason why he would ever do that, I would advise him, look, if this is what you want to do someday in your life, if you want to be a manager, you might want to jump into the arena as soon as you possibly can. What's your read on the Cubs situation, Boog?
I think you named the two guys that, at least at the start, that they're considering most closely. I think Mark Loretta has a legitimate shot. You know, they wouldn't have hired him as the bench coach in that spot, and I think that they liked him. So I think that he should get an interview. I'm guessing David Ross will as well. I don't know whether it'll be brought up, but I do think that if they're looking for something from their next manager, I think they're looking for a guy that every once in a while is going to put the hammer down. And that's not like discipline in like the classic old school sense, but just from a standpoint of like, yeah, sometimes the players are wrong and the manager needs to tell the players that they're wrong. And I think that that's that. And I mean that in a broad-based sense in terms of how they go about their preparation or in-game or whatever. Just every once in a while, stuff like that needs to be said. And I think that's what Theo Epstein felt like sort of got away. David Ross, even though these are guys that he played with and they're his teammates, I've worked enough with David Ross. And, you know, in baseball terms, they talk about, you know, you've heard the term Buster, of course, and it's sneaky pop, you know, for a guy that's got power and you don't realize he's got power. You know, it's sort of sneak attack pop. And Troy, do you have the ability to bleep? Because I'd like to use the word that I want to use.
Oh, but I can bleep. Go for it.
Like, yeah. So my scouting report on David Ross is sneaky asshole. Like, everybody thinks David Ross is the nicest guy on the planet. He's not. David Ross is a sneaky asshole. He, you know, he smiles and charming and all of that, but David Ross will have no problem. You saw the way that he would bark at John Lester. He would have no problem getting in Bryant's face, Baez's face, Rizzo's face, and putting the hammer down when needed. And I know that that's not the only component to this job. And if they hire him, they will need to hire, and this is for all of them. I would say if you hire him, then I'm not sure. You have to have a bench coach next to him that is really, really, that the team feels is really locked in on game tactics. So that's my feeling in terms of that. And that's not a knock on Rossi. I think that every first year manager, you need someone a little more, Jim Riggleman type, who's sitting next to you, that has, you know, watched every single permutation play out and has thought it, et cetera. So.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And someone, as you were talking about that old sneaky pop thing, you know who else is like that? Our friend Aaron Boone.
Absolutely people, right. That's, you know, right. That's exactly right. And Alex Cora as well. You got a little bit of that. So there you go.
There you go. All right. Legend, have fun tonight.
Have a great call tomorrow, Buster. I'll be watching you guys. And, we'll be on ESPN Radio. I'll have a call tonight. And a wild card with Jim Bowden.
Before we speak with Sarah Langs, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. The real question is, how easy would it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves there's a better way. Search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. They built the fastest way to find tickets, so you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. Why is SeatGeek better than the rest? A quick look at the App Store shows over 50,000 five-star reviews. How's that for customer satisfaction? It's a better process. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web, rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10, displays them on an interactive seat map, and SeatGeek breaks down all the details. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots are overpriced, and every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I've talked in the past about how I look on SeatGeek all the time. I was thinking maybe this Elton John tour coming up, that I was going to get a ticket to go see him at some point. And recently I bought tickets for a game in Cleveland to attend with my daughter, and it was so simple. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code, download the SeatGeek app today, and use promo code Buster for $10 off on your first purchase. That's promo code Buster for $10 off on your first purchase.
Numbers game.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I asked Boog the question about going into a playoff game or playoff series. There are times when I'll have a gut feel of, yeah, this team is definitely going to win this game. Do you have that feeling about either one of these wild card games?
You know, not really. I feel like this is what's so fun. I feel like the American League game tomorrow is completely up for grabs. I feel like because of how those two teams handle their pitching staffs and everything else, it's just so difficult to know what is going to happen there. And it feels like something where, you know, if the game gets away from either team or in early innings, that could decide it, or we could see, you know, them battling it out and it be scoreless up until the seventh or something like that. And I'm really excited for this game tonight, because either we're going to see Max Scherzer be back like he was at the beginning of the year, and maybe we'll finally see the Nationals advance, which I would just absolutely love to see from the baseball standpoint, or we're going to see this Brewers team that has been even more beat up than losing Christian Yelich, if that was even possible. We saw with Lorenzo Cain and Ryan Braun being out over the weekend, like, if they can piece this together with Brandon Woodruff, who was a reliever last year, I mean, I feel like they're so up for grabs.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is four. So the Nationals franchise, including the Expos, has lost four straight winner-take-all postseason games, beginning with the 1981 NLCS Game 5 and a best-of-five NLCS that year. So then they lost in 2012, 2016, and 2017 NLDS Game 5s, all of those at home. And their four straight winner-take-all game losses is tied for the third longest such streak in MLB history. The longest streak is an active one, and that'll come into play on Wednesday. It's the A's at 8th Street. And the four straight winner-take-all game losses at home is tied for the second longest such streak all time. And the A's, again, have the only longer streak at 5 straight.
Number two
is zero. So Max Scherzer had a scoreless start in his first career postseason appearance in Game 2 of the ALDS against the Yankees in 2011 when he was on the Tigers. He went 6 innings, he allowed 2 hits and no runs. But since then, he's allowed at least one run in each of his 15 postseason outings, 12 of which have been starts. He has a 4.03 ERA in that span in the postseason. And, of course, he has 3 10K postseason games in that span, but the most recent of those was a 13K outing in the ALCS Game 2 in 2013. So, you know, we haven't quite seen the Max Scherzer that wins those Cy Young Awards and strikes out 20 batters in the postseason lately. So I'm really interested to see if he shows up tonight.
Number one
is 19-6. So the Brewers went 19-6 over their final 25 games this year, tied for their best final 25-game stretch to end any season in franchise history. And the other year when they did that was all the way back last year in 2018. Obviously, that year ended with an NLCS appearance in Game 7, so it went pretty well for them. But this team is pretty hurt in a different spot. But, you know, it's interesting. You know, they went 4-2 against the Nationals this year, including that 14-inning win against the Nationals where they won 15-14. Sean Doolittle allowed 3 home runs, that back-and-forth game with Josh Hader and everybody. So, you know, I'm really interested to see. And I almost wish we got a series between these two because I think it would be really fascinating.
It would be fascinating. Are you at an airport on your way out here to the West Coast?
I am. I'm so sorry. You can hear everything, can't you?
Yeah, that's okay. We're used to the baggage claim days. Travel safe,
yes.
Sir. I will see you tonight at our meeting.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Buster.
Brewers red hot take on the Nationals. Max Scherzer out there for the Nationals.
If Braun is not healthy, they already have Yelich out. It's going to be an uphill battle for the Brewers.
That's right, the National League wild card game tonight. Todd Rosiak covers the Milwaukee Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Todd, obviously one of the big questions for the Brewers, and it has been for the better part of the last month, the injuries. What's the latest that, to your understanding about Lorenzo Cain and about Ryan Braun, who have been so important in stepping up in the aftermath of Christian Yelich's injury?
Yeah, right now, Lorenzo Cain is going to kind of be a game time decision, it looks like. Passed some tests yesterday in the workout, but still obviously is not running near 100%. You gotta tip your hat to the guy because he's been playing essentially on one leg for the last month plus. He's got a bad knee also in that same leg, and then he hurts his ankle on that slide into home in Denver over the weekend. And it takes a lot to get that guy out of the lineup. He's played through a ton of stuff this year. You know, kind of the heart and soul of that team, the heart and soul of that lineup. And, you know, he wants to play like crazy tonight, but it doesn't do you much good, as good as he is, to put him out in center field if he can't roam the way he normally does. So it'll be interesting to see in batting practice and beforehand kind of what, you know, what they decide there. But if he can go, he's obviously going to try to go. Ryan Braun with the calf strain, a little bit better position with him, but it's also an injury that's caused him some grief in the past, and that's another thing that's kind of worth monitoring here, whether or not he's going to be able to make it through a complete game. So you've got him as a question mark, Lorenzo Cain as a question mark. That's obviously going to factor into the way the Brewers decide to construct their roster, because you need obviously adequate backups for both of those guys if they can't make it through the game. So Cain to me, you know, huge part of that lineup. You'd love to get him in there, but if he can't you know, roam center field like he does, I would expect either Trent Grisham or Ben Gamble to be out there.
No, it's not as if you can just stick him at first base and, you know,
right.
he's not affecting anything. To be a center fielder, to have leg injuries, that's going to be a big concern. Okay, in light of all that then, who do you think is an absolutely key guy in their lineup for tonight's game?
I'll give you two guys, Mike Moustakas and Yasmani Grandal. Both of those guys have been real steadying influences, veteran guys, obviously been around the game for a long time, and both have produced. Moustakas and Grandal both have, you know, obviously World Series experience, and both of those guys have really solidified the middle of that lineup with Christian Yelich being out and with all these other injuries. So those two guys, to me, have to set the tone. Max Scherzer is going to obviously be a huge challenge for that lineup and for those guys. So, you know, Grandal has been very interesting to watch this year with his plate discipline, showing some plate discipline that he hasn't over the course of his career with 100-plus walks. And Moustakas, you know, he's been in out of the lineup with injuries as well. I put him in the Kane category, just a tough guy who just refuses to go down to injury, just wants to be in there at all times. He's had a tremendously productive year as well. So for the Brewers to win this game, they're going to need big games from both of those guys tonight.
If the Brewers have an advantage in this game, and I think the Nationals, with the depth of their lineup, potentially Scherzer on the mound, maybe that's where their advantages are. For the Brewers, it feels like, just watching them in recent weeks, if the Nationals tonight are playing with heart rates at 120, the Brewers are playing at 75, because this is two straight years of this stuff, Todd, where they have to play like crazy down the stretch, and it's chaos and it's mayhem and they've got injuries. They are accustomed to that. That sort of situation seems to happen every day for them. That, to me, would be their advantage, this experience that they've had. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree, Buster. And it all starts at the top. Craig Counsell, you know, very steadying influence in that dugout. Obviously did it all as a player, was through some huge moments. And he kind of keeps that heart rate low, I guess, collective heart rate low in the clubhouse. Nothing really phases the guy. It's just so even-keeled, and you've got guys, like I said, Moustakas, Kane in there, who have been through the big moments as well, and they set the tone too. So, you know, last year, a little bit different, but they did make that mad charge to get into the postseason and then wound up a game away from the World Series. This year, to me, has been even a better story because of the fact that really, you know, September 1st rolls around, nobody was thinking these guys are going to make the playoffs, you know, the way the pitching was going. And, you know, they made a couple of under-the-radar trade pickups at the deadline with Drew Pomeranz and Jordan Lyles. Very underwhelming on paper, but all of a sudden those two guys are among their best players heading into this wild card game. So you got a good mix of veteran guys, young guys who haven't necessarily done it before but are not really wide-eyed, and Craig Counsell kind of pulling the levers there. You know, we were talking yesterday about manager of the year. You know, can you base that vote on 1 month? You know, maybe Craig Counsell deserves to be in consideration for the way he's managed this team and really managed this bullpen in the last month to get him into this position. So, yeah, I think you're completely right, Buster. Tonight they should be playing, you know, obviously to try to move ahead in the playoffs here, but certainly not wide-eyed and you know, expecting everything to go their way, because it really has over the course of this month.
Yeah, I'm relieved. I don't have the responsibility of picking the National League Manager of the Year, because that would be a tough choice. Todd, thanks for doing this.
You got it, Buster. My pleasure.
What makes this Nationals team dangerous? You got Max Scherzer that'll throw in the wild card game.
We're fortunate to have a Max Scherzer.
Here's the wind by Scherzer. You swing and a miss. He struck him out.
But also the dudes in this lineup.
Opposite field, line drive, two-run home run for Juan Soto. This is way back toward the corner. It's gone for Trey Turner.
We know what's on the line. We know it's win or go home.
Yeah, at one point, the Nationals had a record of 19-31, and they seemed to be out of it, but they came storming back. They're hosting the wild card game tonight, and we're talking with Mark Zuckerman, who covers the Nationals for Masson Sports. And, Mark, I'm curious, you know, from the outside looking in at the beginning of September, the question of who was going to start this game was an interesting one. Dave Martinez picks Max Scherzer. Internally, was there ever any serious debate?
I think internally, not a whole lot. Once they knew that Max was healthy again, and they needed to see that straight through his last couple of starts, I think once they knew he was healthy, they were confident that he was going to be the guy. Now, they had it set up all along where Steven Strasburg could start this game as well, either if Scherzer wasn't all the way back, or honestly, if they needed him to pitch game 162 or 163, because there was still a chance that was going to happen as recently as, you know, about a week to 10 days ago. But I think internally they felt like once they knew he was good, his last two starts, the final pitching lines were a little misleading. He looked great. He looked like the elite Max Scherzer. He was burned by a couple of big home runs, which is sometimes a problem for him. And then a ball that Juan Soto lost in the sun in St. Louis that kind of spoiled in what should have been a 1-2-3 inning for him. But if you just look at the way he pitched, he looked like his old self, and I think that's why they believe, hey, the three-time Cy Young Award winner, probably a future Hall of Famer, he is the guy on this team, so he's going to be the one to start the game tonight.
They had so many problems with their bullpen early in the year. As we go into the postseason, and you know better than I that bullpens can be so volatile, what's the state of their bullpen? Where do you think they stand now?
Well, I think there are two guys that they definitely trust, and that's Daniel Hudson, who's been outstanding, really, since they got him from Toronto at the trade deadline, and has sort of taken over the closer's role, especially while Sean Doolittle was working back from his own issues. And Doolittle himself has been a lot better here his last few times out, looking more like himself. And so I think those are the two they trust, and they're willing to mix and match with them based on matchups. If the lefties are hitting in the seventh or eighth, they can go to Doolittle there and use Hudson after that. If it's the other way around, they can save Doolittle for the ninth. If they advance and they get to a five-game series, obviously you're going to have to start relying on some other guys like Fernando Rodney and Wander Suero, who've been great at times and been awful at times. The interesting thing to me about tonight, before they can ever get anywhere else, is they have the ability potentially to get through this game without using any relievers besides Doolittle and Hudson, if Davey Martinez is willing to go to Steven Strasburg and Patrick Corbin as the bridge between Scherzer and those guys at the back end. They're going to be on the roster. They're available. They've tried to set this up to be able to do that if they want to do it. To me, if your season is on the line tonight, you got to go down with your best guys, and Strasburg and Corbin for an inning apiece are better options than those other guys in the bullpen.
We've spent a lot of time this summer talking about, you know, the great Yankees lineup, the Astros lineup, even the Red Sox lineup. In a year in which they didn't make the postseason, they piled up a lot of runs, the Dodgers. This is the part of the Nationals team that I think that a casual fan doesn't understand is so good, is the depth of this Washington lineup. You see it day in and day out. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. The one knock on them is they can be a little inconsistent. They'll have these nights where there's nothing going for them and they, you know, total one run on four hits or something like that. But more often than not, especially in the second half of the year, they are a relentless lineup with a lot of options. It's not always the same group, 1 through 8. I'm expecting tonight that it's going to be Howie Kendrick at first base batting fifth. He had one of the most underrated seasons ever because he's not an everyday player at this point in his career. He didn't qualify for any of the, you know, league leaders or anything like that. He's hitting like 345, 15 homers, as a part-time player. And he's been so good and so clutch for them. And when he hits fifth behind Rendon and Soto, who are as good as a 3-4 combo in the league, I believe, it just provides so many opportunities for him, and he's such a threat there to give you a quality at bat. As Drubal Cabrera was a mid-season scrap heap pickup in early August, they had some injuries, they needed somebody to fill the gap. He wound up becoming basically their everyday second baseman and has been incredibly clutch for them. More RBIs than games played for the Nationals. So that's big for them, hitting sixth. Kurt Suzuki has been very good catching, and he's healthy again. So top to bottom, they can beat you in a lot of different ways. They have the speed. They have the guys who have for power. They have guys who can work at bats. And with everybody healthy, they're going to have a good bench as well. Matt Adams, Ryan Zimmerman, Gerardo Parra, Brian Dozier. If Davey plays this right, he's going to have the ability to dictate the matchups late in this game, which is where you always want to be if you're a manager.
Yeah, and Bukshambi said that if the Nationals get through this game, they may represent the truest and most serious threat to the Dodgers as we move forward. All right, Mark, thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Buster. Have a good one.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, some Bleacher Tweets for you on this special NL Wild Card Day. First one comes from Michael Taslitz at Michael Ath. You constantly remind us about Mike Trout's greatness. Is it good for baseball that the best player is locked on the Angels? He finishes the 2019 season having played in 3 October games since his 2011 debut and starts 2020 with another new manager.
You know, I think the Angels are going to be better. Like, they've gotten out from underneath so much debt. Their farm system's gotten better. I think they're going to make big moves during the course of this offseason, and they may, you know, one of the big moves may be hiring Joe Maddon, and I think he'd be a good manager for Trout. I think they'd be a great team together. I actually think that moving forward that they're in a good place.
Yeah, I agree. Next one comes from Weidel at Weidel. The A's have the best record since June 16th, won the season series against both the Astros and Yankees, and have fresh young lefties that came off the DL to help their late season push. Why aren't we talking about the A's more?
We've been talking about that stuff, Troy. Back me up on that.
Yeah, no, I know.
We've been talking about how dangerous we think Oakland is.
Carl's talked about a lot about how dangerous the A's and Rays are.
Yes.
We rank them highly in our Power 10. We think very highly of the A's.
Oh, 100%. I absolutely think if they win this series, it wouldn't shock me if they beat the Astros. We've talked about that. They won 6 of their last 8 games against them.
Exactly. You cannot discount them. Mark Harper at Mark Harper 36. I understand Yordan Alvarez is going to justifiably win AL Rookie of the Year, but I don't understand why Eloy Jimenez doesn't get more love. He finishes with more home runs and RBI than Alvarez and was on a holy tear in the second half. What are your thoughts, Buster?
All right. So the slash line for Yordan Alvarez, a .313 average, a .412 on-base percentage, and a .655 slugging percentage. Eloy Jimenez, who's, you know, terrific player, and he's going to be going forward, his batting average was almost 50 points lower. His on-base percentage was almost 100 points lower, and his slugging percentage was 140 points lower. So, Eloy, going forward, you're excited about him. The White Sox have every reason to be excited about him. But Yordan Alvarez this year, absolutely far and away the best rookie, and he should win that award unanimously.
Another tweet from SportsFanAK at SportsFanAK1. The Mariners have once again missed the postseason. What have been their biggest issues? It seems like they rarely have any prospects work out, and if they do, they're playing on a different team.
I think their issues are at the macro level, where it feels like the big picture plan doesn't match up with their short-term needs. Like when Jerry Dipoto took over as general manager, he was trying to win at the big league level while also rebuilding at the minor league level, and they didn't make a lot of progress in either direction there because he kept on, you know, and look, he worked for people, and that's the plan that they wanted. He used some of the minor league resources to try to goose the major league team, and they had a good team, but they didn't have a team that was good enough to make the postseason. At least now they have a plan, whether you call it rebuilding or tanking. At least they're trying to build towards something collectively throughout the entire organization as opposed to what they did, you know, 3-4 years ago.
I've got another Bleacher tweet for you, for me, Buster. So I was listening to a podcast this morning, one of my favorite ones that ESPN does, South Beach Sessions, hosted by Dan Le Batard, and he had on Washington State football head coach Mike Leach, who is one of the craziest guys out there. He was talking about his pet raccoon, told a bunch of weird stories. I'm wondering, who's the most eccentric manager or baseball person that you've ever covered?
Eccentric manager, wow. Let me think about that and get back to you. I want to give you a really good answer. Some things jump to mind today, but I want to give you a really good answer.
Okay, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Thank you for the Bleacher Tweets this morning. Keep them coming every day, all throughout the playoffs. Use the hashtag Bleacher Tweets.
And we're going to talk about Troy jumping out of a plane. Did he jump out of the friend zone? My thanks today to Todd Rosiak, Mark Zuckerman, Sarah Langs, Book Shambi, and to Troy Farkas for producing this podcast. Have a great day, everybody, and enjoy the playoffs tonight.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.